Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Dead Frog Podcast. I am your host, Joe Felix. As most of the time, I am joined by...
Allison Gloucester.
And we're a podcast dedicated to analyzing, understanding, and finding out what makes stand-up funny. Today we'll be covering George Lopez's set for the 1997 Tejano Music Awards. And we're going to be... before we do that, we're going to hear a little bit about him.
Let's talk George Lopez. George was born in 1961 in Mission Hills, Los Angeles. He was raised by his mother until he was about 10 years old. And then she ended up leaving. And he was raised by his for the rest of his life by his grandma and step-grandpa. He did a lot of stand-up comedy and throughout the 80s and the 90s. And in 2000, he was approached by none other than Sandra Bullock, of all people, who asked him to produce and star in his own TV show in a comedy. And that is what ended up becoming the George Lopez, the TV show.
Damn.
It was on a, yeah. So, and the cool thing when I was reading about that is that part of her impetus to do it was that she was like, you know, she the obvious that there's like no shows that have Latino families, and then also she wanted it to be, I don't know if she did or she obviously he did, I don't know how the conversation came about, but it was clear from the start that they wanted it to be about that but not about that. They wanted it to be just like an actual show that didn't have to just be about their heritage but not shy away from it, so which was kind of a big deal. So then it ended up getting canceled. I don't really know the technical details. I'm on the switch from ABC to Nick at Night. It wasn't a huge success when it was on the air, and it got canceled and replaced by Cavemen. I don't know if you guys remember that show, which was horrible. And George, who has always been very outspoken, he publicly criticized the head of ABC, and he basically said, "So a Chicano can't be on TV, but a caveman can." After that, he had two more TV shows. He had St. George, which lasted only one season, and Lopez, which was two seasons. And in the meantime, he's done a lot of acting roles in movies and TV shows, and he's done a lot of stand-up. And currently, well, obviously not currently because of the epidemic, but he's doing a stand-up tour called the Wall World Tour. So I'm guessing he'll pick that up when things get back to more normal. But yeah, that's George.
Cool. Very awesome. Down with the Brown, send Bullock.
There you go.
And did you say it's called the Wall World Tour?
Yeah, the Wall World Tour. And I looked at it, looks like there's still tickets on Ticketmaster for like later this year or so, or it hasn't, I mean, I guess been canceled completely, but yeah, Wall.
Okay.
Like your wall. Yeah.
So if we are saying people should buy tickets, what we do mean is buy them like 9 tickets at a time so that you can have a buffer between you and the other people around you.
Exactly. That is exactly the way you buy tickets.
Buy the seats that are in front of you, diagonal to that.
Yes.
Make a little tic-tac-toe grid with you at the center.
I would love to see that.
I know she's chomping at the bit. I know she's waiting to talk. But first, I got to tell you about Leslie Martinez, the person that's waiting, who's joined us today to talk about Jorge Lopez. She's an actor, director, producer, comedian. Been doing it for over 6 years. As a child, her parents would make her, force her to dress up like Selena and perform for all her relatives. In fact, she wrote the obituary for Selena's. When she died, when she was murdered. Leslie's still looking for the murderer, even though we know who it is.
She won't be let down. She needs to find her.
She's like, nah, it couldn't be another Latina. Right? So then, but she is, you know, on a lighter note, she is the lead voice for Electoral Elementary. It's a narrative kids podcast that explores simple civic lessons with storytelling and song. She plays Gloria, a young AOC type. I don't know what that means. I don't know that we could just kind of pigeonhole people like that. Yeah, but also, our very own Allison Kloster plays Ricky Wall, a second grader who has a second grader who just came across alt-right ideals.
That is absolutely accurate. Please, if you're gonna go listen to the podcast, please be listening for that character. We promise that character will definitely be there.
And to move on, she's part of Elon Grimes. She's part of the fantastic Latinx comedy Pachanga. She was actually part of Los Angeles Everything Comedy Festival in 2019. You know, everybody loves her. Today, we have a very special guest, Leslie Martinez. Please put your hands together.
Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Heck yes. Hello, Leslie.
Hi. Tell us a little bit more about Electoral Elementary.
And it's basically a young girl, I believe in the fifth grade, who basically runs for president and she gets it. Nope. And now she's learning about navigating the elementary school as being a president, and kind of what you have to do and how you have to, you try to make everyone mm-hmm. happy, but you can't make everyone happy. And she kind of learns some hard lessons along the way.
I thought you were saying she ran for president of the country and she got it. And I was like, go girl.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. And I thought she was in sixth grade, but
there's a huge difference. You're right. We need to make a correction.
I think it's fifth grade.
Okay, there we go.
Now that we're saying, I'm like, oh, yeah, sixth grade.
You're also part of SuperVaz on YouTube. A very high quality, I would say, sketch team.
Thank you.
Yeah. Allie and I actually co-founded SuperVaz. We were both just kind of wanting to create more and share our voice, and we didn't really know anyone that created their own content, or that we weren't close enough to anyone that kind of shot their own stuff, so we didn't really have anyone to ask, and we were like, let's just do it ourselves. So we just started writing a bunch of stuff, got some of our closest friends who wanted to pitch in and be a part of it, and we slowly just kind of started making, sketches over the years, and it's kind of evolved now. People have come and gone. But we've learned a lot along the way. Allie and I have learned a lot of camera and on-set stuff. And yeah, we really enjoy doing it.
So you do it all. You write, you act, and you produce. But one thing that interests me is that you direct. Who are mm-hmm. you? Who do you think you are that you can do all those things so well?
Well, I'm an overachiever. That's who I am. I just, again, it goes back to having no one else to, like, not really knowing that there's not going to be anyone else that does it for me. So just needing to do it myself. It honestly, it goes back to my perfectionist and controlling issues. But, it really just is because I Allie and I were like, well, no one's going to do it for us. So we got to do it ourselves. We got to learn it ourselves.
Cool. Now that the audience knows you a little bit better, and you've established your legitimacy in comedy, let's take a break to listen to the clip, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
California, that's where I live. I'm not from East L.A. Not all Latinos come from East L.A. Some of us are from the Holy Land, Texas. The Holy Land, damas y caballeros. The Holy Land. 55% Latino. It's like a whole nother country. It's like Mexico. Wake up. You're not in Kansas anymore, tontos. We are not seasonal anymore. We are Latinos are here all year round. We have to give a nice round of applause to Henry Cisneros, who was very instrumental in building this place. Señor Henry. Yes. The first Latino president of the United States, Henry Cisneros. It's still going to be the White House, but with blue trim on the side, The little ceramic ducks in front, ay, qué bonito. The Oval Office will have a calendar from the Panería with the Aztec dude, like that. We need a Latino president. We need that. We don't mess around. I'd like to introduce you to the first lady. Well, she's not the first lady, but don't start nothing, all right? Also, we would have a vice president that would be able to spell potato. Muy fácil. We'd have a vice president hooked on phonics. Let me spell potato. P-A-P-A, papa, okay. Let's move on. Give a round of applause to the ladies, to the Latina ladies who are very beautiful this evening, dressed up with the pelo up. You can smell Aquanet. There's no smoking because the hair. Ay, Dios mío. Págame. Aquanet for days and nothing behind the hair. That's where I keep my important papers back there, you know. Member, Lorena Bobbitt, Latina. Donte, cuidado, cuidado. They will cut you off, Latina women. That's the Latina way of telling you we should talk. Come here. We have to be very proud of, especially the family, the abuelita that cooks forever, 4 o'clock in the morning making tortilla. Making tamales at Christmas time because it's the law. One little grandmother's big, 170 tamales cooking. You know, Mexican grandmothers, they just keep cooking until they're done talking about everybody. That's the way it works, you know. We're almost done, tia. Let me tell you what that baboso did last week. Let me call and get more masa, okay? You know masa, for the people who are bilingually impaired, masa is not where the Mexican astronauts train. Okay? Yeah. I'm very proud to be Mexican. And nights like this, you're very proud to be Mexican. I almost didn't make it. I was working at La Fonda, you know. My shift. The two most popular Latinos in television, we have to change. The Menendez brothers. Eric and Lyle. Where have you ever met another Latino with the name Lyle? Hi, I'm Chivo. Hi, I'm Lyle. That's the cuckooey, Lyle. I don't really believe the Menendez brothers are Latinos for two reasons. For one, we have a lot of respect for our family and we would never shoot our parents. Yes. You know that. It's all family. And two, our parents would shoot back. So. Yeah. You may kill them, but you're... Cover me, vieja! Cover me! It is always a pleasure to come to San Antonio and have real Mexican food, not Taco Bell. Please. Ay. Get run for the border. What is that? Run for the border. We're from here. You run. You run, gringo. Correle. They opened a Taco Bell in Mexico that nobody goes to. They look at it like the haunted house. Ooh. See, mijo, that's where the cucuy lives in there, you see? See him behind that desk? What's the slogan for the Taco Bell in Mexico? Stay where you are? What do they use? Plus, Taco Bell has something on their menu called a chilito, and do I need to explain what chilito is? Or chilote, depending on whether you've been swimming or not, you know. Can you believe on their menu, chilito? I'd like 7 chilitos, wow.
There's that many of us working here. Hang on. 1, 2, 3, 4. Punch in, punch in. Let's go. Would you like us for here or to go? We can throw palo over there. But the police now, you know, the police in San Antonio in the bikes, you know, they have bikes, you know. Bring, bring. You see the cops in the bikes? Bring, bring, bring. And then they have pepper spray that they use now. Who is this for? Not for Latinos, because we like hot food. The hotter, the better. You spray that in a Latino. That is delicious. What the hell is that? I'm gonna get some chips. I don't know. What's next? Ground pepper? Okay, freeze. Salsa does not come in a little plastic packet. It comes in an old mayonnaise jar that your grandmother makes like a scientist. You see the little plastic packets, and you see people who think that that's hot. Americanos, they put a little bit. Oh. What's in that tomato? Oh. We need to use our power. We need to use our money wiser. Don't buy products that disrespect Latino people. Don't buy a Festiva, a Fiesta. They don't have the Buick Bar Mitzvah. I haven't seen that car. I saw a Festiva that had a club on the steering wheel. Why? I broke in and took the club. I had to turn the alarm off. In 20 years, Latinos will be the majority in this country, not just in this state, in this country. Yes. I'll be a grandfather. I'll be telling scary stories to my grandkids. Okay, mijitos, your grandpa's gonna tell you a scary story. A long time ago, when your grandpa was a little boy, there used to be people who had white skin. Ah! Really, grandpa? Really, mijo, like the man who cuts our grass? Suerte! Thank you very much. Suele!
And we're back. Leslie, thank you for sharing that clip with us.
Yes.
Dude, so,
yeah,
you know, I've always been daunting, taking on George Lopez, you know, a legend in, I don't know, like Latino and especially Chicano comedy. What's your relationship to George Lopez?
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching George Lopez's stand-up ever since I was a kid. My dad and I would watch a lot of his stuff together, and it was honestly like what bonded my dad and I a lot. My dad is a very funny guy, and he actually reminds me of George
Lopez. They look alike.
They look alike, his mannerisms, his type of humor. So I've always felt some sort of familiarity and comfort in George Lopez. I always thought it was awesome how he always has been and still is so unapologetically Latino, and he's proud of it and he doesn't care who knows it. I feel like he was talking about some groundbreaking stuff back in the day that, you know, wasn't really talked about by a lot of people, that only just now is coming to the surface, and that is now becoming more of a mainstream thing to talk about. But, you know, he was talking about police brutality. He was talking about brown people being pulled over for no reason just because of the color of their skin. He was talking about how, you know, when Taco Bell had a slogan that said, you know, run for the border. He was just talking about all these issues that pertain to being a Latino, and it was really groundbreaking. And I think people, even now, even though it's being spoken about more now, I feel like people are still kind of afraid to talk about that. I feel like people don't know how to tackle the issue at hand now. So it's just really cool seeing that he kind of paved the way for a lot of that conversation.
Yeah, it's very interesting when he decides to incorporate jokes that have a greater like social reflection in them. And it's hard to know whether he's putting a thin veil over them and he's acknowledging that the audience is going to understand that this is a greater issue, or if he's simply like telling a joke about the thing and is willing to just mention it briefly and then move on. But with this set, I was hoping I can put into just very quick context. He is performing at an award ceremony. And yes. This is one of these sets where, he's gained a lot of notoriety, and he's like between, the distribution of the awards or other musical acts. Right. And I feel like as a comic, this is one of the cushiest gigs you can get, because you have everyone on your side, right? You're only doing 10 minutes. You don't have to have like your greatest jokes. You kind of you're ingratiating yourself in a way where it's not demeaning in any way. It's more like, I'm gonna keep the party going with these jokes, right? This is a night of like celebrating Latinidades, and so what comes to mind when I was watching this was this comment made by Stephen Wright on the Mark Maron podcast about how as a comic you should start out in venues like this, like what George Lopez is playing, and then move on slowly to like grimy bars, because as a comic you start out in really grimy bars, no one's paying attention, right? Whereas like when you're on stage in these big venues, you've won the audience from the beginning. So it's just a good place to be at.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was performing way before this. I totally get where that quote is coming from, but I'm not a stand-up comic, so I have no actual experience to derive from this. But from what I've heard from other stand-up comics, and even from doing improv and sketch in like places where no one is paying attention to you, I do feel like doing it in those grimy bars or in those shows that no one cares about and everyone's yawning, those are the shows that kind of build you up and make you a stronger performer. Like, I feel like you can only become better and stronger after you have had those shows under your belt. And I feel like that's where George Lopez comes from. Like, he has had to, I mean, he grew up in LA, but I feel like he has had to perform in the 80s. LA was still the valley was still very white in the 80s. So I'm sure he has had to perform, a ton of sets where not everyone is Latino, and he's had to prove his comedy against different races. And he has had to win the room in places where it's not just Latino people listening and relating to him.
He hasn't done the work. I'm just saying that this is what do you call it? A victory lap right here. This sort of set.
Sure.
He's encouraging Latinos. He's like, look, we might even have a Latino president, right? This is going to be the next one. And he makes a joke, right, where he posits Henry Cisneros, a Latino in the Oval Office, having that calendar with the Aztec dude, right? Which is a big cultural touchstone amongst Latinos, or especially Mexican-Americans. And then one thing that I really liked, dude, that I don't know how you perceive this, but she goes, acting out Henry Cisneros as president, he talks about the first lady, right? He makes that joke about how she's not the first lady, but don't start nothing.
Yeah, it's really funny hearing that, especially now with the current president we have, who, we know that is also an accurate statement for Yeah, I mean, I really love this set because it seems like he's really in his element. He seems like he's thriving. He seems like he's enjoying every minute of it. Like, he just seems totally in his element, where, like, every word is flowing through him and out of his mouth, and, like, the vibe of the audience is flowing through his blood. Like, he just seems to be so alive, and it's very enjoyable to watch. He's, like, he's lit up.
Yeah, and I think with the beginning of it, like, the First Lady joke, that comes at the beginning. I started watching this set before I realized that he was hosting something, and I was like, this feels different than a normal set. And I think it's going back to what you're saying, Joe, with how you know, there is less pressure in a way, because it's more of like a party going kind of atmosphere. So he really bridges the gap between his normal stand-up persona and hosting a show. And so the beginning of this set feels like there's more pauses between jokes. Like, there's more, like, if you were to look at it as just like an audio file, you would see a lot more, I guess, laughs or lulls, I should say. Not bad lulls, but he's communicating with the audience, and it's more audience management than it is like straight jokes at this point.
Yeah, I think it has something to do with him not having them for more than those 10 minutes. Like, he's like, okay, I don't know if he's doing this, but I would say that those pauses or lulls are pivots. Like, okay, they like this, they might like this, let's move to this here. And because he knows the catalog of his jokes so well, he's able to touch them. He just needs an extra moment to think. And also, there are a few jokes that just go over the audience's head. There's one that I really want to point to later. But right now, I do want to point out this one joke that he makes that puts us in 1997, that puts us in the 90s, where he talks about then you would have a vice president that knows how to spell potato, yeah, alluding to Dan Quayle.
And that's totally, I mean, I don't know if... I don't know what other stand-up sets he was doing at that time, but to me that feels like such a dated joke that you can do in more of an award show with like an audience, like a televised audience, you know? So, yeah. I don't know if that's something that someone would normally include in their set. Like, it's because it's such a dated commentary.
Oh, yeah. It's of the time. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I mean... It's like, yeah, it's like most award shows. Like, if you watch the Oscars now or the Emmys now, they always have jokes that are pertaining to the current state of affairs, whether that's political or, you know, pop culture, whatever that is. So it seems like that. But watching it as an audience viewer now and not being familiar with that reference, it's still funny to me. Like, I can still take that implication and be like, oh, they're, you know, I had to Google Dan Quayle right now, and like I put it together in my mind what he meant, and that was funny to me, having a vice president of the United States that doesn't know how to spell potato.
Or a president. Like,
it is dated, and it is definitely of the time, but it still makes me laugh now in 2020.
That's a good point.
Not only did he not know how to spell potato, he went to an elementary school and he corrected a student's spelling there, which is like he failed on the national level. Like,
a double whammy.
I mean, Zach, he looks like a genius compared to what's going on nowadays.
Go. There we go. Leslie getting another harangue about our I have a question. I don't know if either of you know how to, like, I got lost with this one. Then he makes a joke about how he knows how to spell it. At least he knows how to spell it. P-A-P-A. Mm-hmm. Papa. Mm-hmm. Right? And there's like mm-hmm. a big emotional sort of response from the audience. Mm-hmm. How would you describe the logic of that joke?
I think that was probably the first time in the set that he... Yeah, you're right. It felt like such a release. Like, the audience felt seen and heard so much. And do you mean the logic within the structure or just within the joke itself? Because I would say, to me, that was the most... That, to me, seemed like very much... like, that's the first time he's introducing something that... I think in the set, that's the first, the whole White House set is... He's calling attention to the fact that, like, we as a people... want to be seen more, and we deserve to be seen more. And that's just such a, it seemed to me like a cathartic release that he built up to pretty quickly.
Exactly. It felt like, okay, I've talked about having the first Latino president. Now let me paint mm-hmm. a picture for you. And that's what it felt like.
But yeah. I guess what I'm asking is, so, I mean, Ali did touch on, like, the release that occurs. It's, I think when someone's trying to do a joke like this, where you're trying to get a big emotional response from the audience, your wording doesn't have to be, or the logic behind the joke doesn't have to be very carefully crafted. They can understand what you're alluding to in this joke. And because it has the right emotional triggers involved, it gets the response that you want, regardless of it making sense. Like, because he's talking about, like, you know, I would be able to spell it, right? But then he spells it in Spanish. So that's what I'm trying to...
I can see that. Absolutely. I'm sure. I mean, that's just like how, you know, they do studies on how what we say means absolutely nothing. It's our body language that, and it's our attitude and all the nonverbal cues that we're giving people. And if that's how we as humans work, then he's totally doing that exact thing, but in stand-up comedy form. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's a beautiful thing about stand-up. And I think that's something that the greats can do, where they realize that, because I think a lot of stand-up comics and a lot of people starting out just in comedy in general, you really do worry so much about the wording being perfect and, oh my gosh, I gotta have this just right, when really it's like, no, it's the how, it's how you say it, it's your confidence, it's the emotional aspect is very huge. And for him to to come out the gate in the set and to convey that really puts the audience on his side.
Talking about Lorena Bobbitt, he's like, you know, Latinas, they will cut you off. And that's their way of talking to you. Or telling you that maybe we should talk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which, like, that. In the 70s, 80s, 90s, and even the mid-aughts, people would... There was this whole thing about, like, this is what our culture is like, right? Even though it wasn't a good representation. And... Mm-hmm. It's like the same conversation that you have where, like, you're talking to other Latinos, especially Latinos are maybe are the generation previous to ours, Leslie, which, because we're the same age. And they'll be like, oh, you remember when our parents used to hit us? Right? Then they'll laugh. Then they'll be like this collective sadness about how they know that was pretty awful. Right? But then they'll also be like, oh, but that's the thing about being Latino. We're tough, right? Our parents hit us. But then you start thinking, like, fuck. What are you trying to compensate for, right?
Yeah, it's like the waving across the room joke that he also had, where, like, white people wave and they're happy, and then, you know, Latinos do, and they're like, oh, man. Kind of like a similar DNA structure to those two jokes.
That was a different...
Oh, that was a different show we watched. Sorry, we're watching. So he explores that a few times then. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I really love about George Lopez, and I mentioned earlier that he's so unapologetically Latino, that now, I mean, our whole society, which is great, we have come a long way from hitting children and considering stereotypes about ourselves and other people, you know, but I do love that he just so unabashedly says, yeah, I was hit as a child. Yeah, this is how we are. And I think that is kind of what we needed to hear in that point in time, and hear other people like, oh, that's how I felt, at least watching him, like, oh, this isn't just me. Like, this is, all of us are like this. It felt like we were part of a larger community, especially I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood. So I didn't really have that many people around me I didn't have a lot of people that were like George Lopez or that were like me around. So kind of watching his stand-up growing up really made me feel like part of a community, and like, oh man, like, look, it's someone like me on TV. It's someone like my dad. It's someone representing our culture. And sure, like, a lot of the stereotypes of, like, hitting people, being drunk, and, you know, like, all these things are stereotypes, but they're funny and they are all based in truth. And I know now we're at a point where, like, we're trying to progress from that, and we're trying to show, like, you know, we're more than these stereotypes. But I still think it's funny when it's like someone of our people pointing out those stereotypes and being like, well, this is kind of how we grew up. You know, that was his point in doing his show, I think, how he wanted it to be a Mexican-American family, but he didn't want it to be just specifically about being a Mexican-American family. It was like the Bill Cosby show for Mexican-Americans. It was like Full House, but for Mexican-Americans. You know, they went through real life issues. They just happened to be Mexican-American. And I think that that's kind of where he's coming from, and kind of, well, at least my stance on it is that I can make these jokes. I like these jokes. But white, other people that are not Latino cannot make these jokes.
Just kidding. Allie was waiting for that. Ricky Wall was waiting to chime in.
Gotta delete this document I've been writing the whole time.
Well, I feel like it definitely creates a few juxtapositions. So one, there's the Bobbitt thing. It's like, oh, Latinas will do that, right? But also in the same set, mm-hmm. he talks about the Menendez brothers not being Latinos because they acted so violently.
Well, I think what he was trying to point out there was not the violence act, but the fact who was being gunned towards. So in Lorena Bobbitt's case, I think her husband was white, right? Yeah. And, you know, there's, you know, that whole stereotype of, you know, like, and the way that Lorena Bobbitt was, that whole case was pictured, was that he was beating her and he wasn't, you know, and she, like, she had enough and she cut off his dick. But on the other hand, with the Menendez brothers, they were fighting against family. They disrespected their parents. And in a Latino culture, that's a big no-no. You know, you don't, no matter how much shit they put you through, you don't disrespect your parents. And that was where that joke came from. And also the fact that your parents would hit back.
Oh, that was so funny.
So I think that was the main difference to me, my takeaway from those two jokes.
You've made the point of, like, representation, especially how strongly one can connect to it, given that they lack it in general. But it seems like, you know, earlier you were talking about how you shouldn't downplay you shouldn't believe that your audience is less clever than they actually are. I've seen, you know, in my own, mm-hmm. I guess this is anecdotal, but seeing other Latinos who are like, oh yeah, you know, my parents used to hit me and I'm gonna hit my kids because of it, you know, and it becomes, there's a way in which the jokes are interpreted and normalized to the negative mm-hmm. understanding of the interpretation, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna take pride in being maybe like acting in a very like salty manner, like where, like, one of the things that you see on television is being like sassy mm-hmm. or catty, or being like just sort of mean to one another, right? Especially on Twitter. And you think that's a personality. Now look at that in the voice of, like, of being a Latino. You know, you have people who are like, well, these are the people that, these are the archetypes into which I can fall. Which are, I can be a chola, I can be mm-hmm. I can be a spicy Latina, right? And one of my traits as a spicy Latina is that I cut off penises if you were to, like, cheat on me or whatever. And I can go real extreme, real fast. And given that, like I said earlier, people are susceptible mm-hmm. to that sort of stuff, and they find that that's a form of personhood that they can take on, or an act that they put on for, like, as their real life, you know, personality. Then they do it. So what I'm wary about is giving the audience credit in that way, and, like,
yeah. I also think this Lorena Bobbitt, she cut off her husband's penis in 1993, and this was in the 1994 Tejano Music Awards. So this was like less than a year later in a story that we're still talking about today. So is that a joke that George Lopez wanted to tell? Is that a joke that the producers wanted him to touch on? Because, again, it's like a cliche award show. Like, does that matter? Does he still, he's still, even if he has to, quote unquote, has to say something, like, does he have to, well, you're saying is like, oh, he has a higher responsibility and to understand that his voice could influence how people perceive it. And I, yeah.
That's a good point, because he does, like, for his, most of his jokes do last a little bit, but Lauren about it, he kind of just touches on it and keeps walking on by. He doesn't really go on too long about Lauren about it specifically. I mean, I don't know, to answer, you know, to speak to you saying whether it's going to influence people to kind of take that persona on, I don't know. All I can do is speak from my experience, and I didn't take it away like that. You know, that argument could be said for anything. It could be said for music that we listen to, for scary movies that we watch, for video games that people play. You know, like, people were blaming Marilyn Manson for Columbine. People were blaming Call of Duty for, you know, other mass shootings. So, you know, I feel like that's part of a bigger conversation, in that what we say has weight, and, you know, we do have a responsibility in storytelling and what we're putting out there. And I definitely agree with you, like, we should be more cautious of that. Speaking to this specific set, I don't think it was anything too controversial. I think that he was just, he stated what happened. She cut his penis off, said, "Watch out, men, ladies can do this," moved on. I mean, yeah, that's a stereotype of women being, you know, sassy Latinas or whatever, moved on, went to talk about Menendez brothers. He's like, well, I don't think they're, I thought he was going to talk, he was going to mention the Menendez brothers and say, I don't really think that they're Latino, because, you know, they're so rich or something, you know. I know he talks about his money in later stand-up specials and such that he has, that he feels like he doesn't really belong fully in the white world or in the Latino world because of money. So I don't know. I mean, there's definitely a lot to be said there. I can't really speak into whether people will take on that persona because of his jokes.
You made a comparison to like a larger category of, like, transgressive behaviors illustrated by different media and different like music and stuff. But in this situation, it's, mm-hmm. you know, not to speak about other comics, but it's comics of different ethnic groups having such large audiences and having sort of the same subject matter be said, like, special after special. You know, everyone involved, like, the Latin Kings of comedy, you know, a lot of them had different forms of, and I feel like I can make this critique regarding, like, Latino comics, because I am Latino, right? I'm not going to go on to tell you, like, you know, there was a poor portrayal of African Americans done by so-and-so African American comic. I'm bringing on the idea of an internal critique of, like, leaving those topics behind and really considering how much they affected the psyche of people who came across them, especially given that, especially because there's such little representation of us in the media. Thank you for coming on. Is there anything you want to plug at the moment?
Yeah. No, I mean, if you want to know more about me or stay up to date on stuff that I'm doing, you can follow me on Instagram at Leslie with two E's. So LESLIEE122. You can also check out Electoral Elementary wherever you listen to podcasts, coming out this fall. And you could check out Super Vols Comedy on Facebook or YouTube.
More popular on Facebook.
Or Instagram.
So, Leslie, thank you so much for coming on. I think you've really helped us.
Yes.
Allie?